must be passing her around. Her mic drop moment reply was me through and through. They act like I ain't in charge of where I throw this cooch. 15-year-old Sophie had that exact mentality, and 31-year-old Sophie most certainly still does now. Though I am thrilled with the generation coming through, being open to empowering individuals for traits that were once deemed taboo, the patriarchy does still exist. When I was younger, girls who openly enjoyed being sexual, whether they had had two partners or 20, were instantly branded sluts or whores by their male peers. It's a horrifically outdated view, and one I can only describe as foul. A view neither my son nor daughter will ever be exposed to under my roof. I see myself as a real-life future Jean Milburn, the outspoken and well-known sex therapist character in the hit Netflix series Sex Education, providing my children with extensive knowledge on both sex and relationship psychology. But whilst I was always very sexual, I actually didn't have a huge number of partners in my teenage years and early 20s because I was always in serious long-term relationships. At 15, I was having sex with a friend who wasn't officially my boyfriend. However, we slept together regularly and exclusively for the majority of the year. Then in year 11, I was in a relationship with another boy for nearly 2 years. I was with someone who I can see was a total fuckstain after that. I like to think of that as my greatest insult. I actually imagine a flaky, smelly, crusty stain on the carpet left over from some bad sex. And then I met Jared at 20 years old and ended up marrying him. Jared and I had always shared the same views on sex. Ever since we first got together, we have both always believed that humans aren't meant to only be with one person sexually. In our personal view, it is a fairy tale to believe that one person can forever meet all of our emotional and sexual needs. I'm not denying that such love and commitment can exist for others, and I'm never one to judge another's choice. This was merely our view and one we couldn't see longevity without. We'd had many conversations from the early days in our relationship and had always agreed that we didn't believe sexual monogamy was natural for mammals. For me, relationships need to have mutual consent, respect, flexibility, empathy, communication, care, and adaptability. And whilst monogamy is the dominant pattern amongst Western society, I know many people in relationships who preach monogamy yet lack basic skills like open communication, honesty, and respect. And while society has conditioned us to believe that monogamy is the ethical and moral choice, infidelities often seem to be the cause for relationship breakdowns and divorce. Is monogamy the right thing to do when, in so many relationships, there are inconsistent standards between what one person believes they can do and what they expect of their partner? When a friend from school who was married to her childhood sweetheart, a woman who has never had a sexual experience with another human, who is now pregnant with her second child, who classifies herself as monogamous, proclaims after sinking one too many glasses of rosé with the girls that she has settled in life and lives in fear she will get bored. Whilst many would think that an open relationship is detrimental to your commitment, Jared and I were always of the belief that this choice actually highlighted our deep love for each other. Our communication, trust, honesty, and respect for each other's needs far outweighed an outdated interpretation of what a successful, happy relationship looked like. Besides, each of us allowing the other to be pleasured provided us with great pleasure in return. It was more than love for us too. It was the common ground we shared for our sensuality and sexual desires in life, something Jared always allowed me to express without judgment. We both always wanted to try new things and respected each other enough to not be intimidated by what the other person wanted or needed in their life. A lot of people heard that we were swingers, but I can assure you that's far from the truth. Trust me, we tried our best to find adult parties that catered and suited to us both, but never had any luck. We did share a partner swapping experience with someone from Jared's circle and his wife one night, something that had been built up over a few months in a playful group chat, but in our view, it was very underwhelming. One year, I hired Jared two escorts for his birthday present, as living out a 2-to-1 threesome was a fantasy of his. Despite the girls asking me, I didn't partake because I wanted that to be purely Jared's experience. It was his birthday after all, and it was his moment to enjoy. But let's pretend we were swingers. Let's pretend we engaged in fetish play or frequently hired professional sex workers to partake in activities with us. Why, as two consenting adults, is this in any way an issue for anyone else? It wasn't something we openly spoke about. Believe it or not, we did actually maintain some privacy during our time together. But it's also not something we are ashamed of, nor should we be. While sex can be interpreted differently by every individual, to us, it was one of the most natural things we did. While I was always very open sexually and I have always owned my sensual nature, I've often been made to feel that as a woman, there's something wrong with me. Whenever I'd speak to some girlfriends about sex as an adult, wanting to ask them questions or spilling about an experience like you would want to with your friends, they'd roll their eyes. Oh, Sophie, you're disgusting. You are out of control. What on earth is wrong with you? It appears that whilst owning my sexuality, I wasn't facing up to the fact that I might not have been hanging out with like-minded people. Ever since I was 16, I've been able to have casual sex without getting tangled up in emotions, and many guys over the years have called me a unicorn because of it. "You're not fucking real," they've said, unable to believe that a woman can just enjoy sex for what it is and not get emotionally attached. I know the many stereotypes that have existed surrounding women and attachment. However, the older I've gotten and the more I've aligned myself with people who have similar values to mine, the more I've come to realize that it actually isn't uncommon for females to be able to separate sex from emotion, not quite on par with the assumptions made of us. Intensities of both desire and arousal vary vastly between people, and there are strong messages of acceptance around women who have little to no libido. But I have always pushed to validate the feelings of those women who, like myself, crave pleasure and variety, and those who seek to continually evolve for the purpose of sexual adventure by living out real-life fantasies. As recently as a couple of years ago, while I was between partners, I was sleeping with a female friend of mine. We had both separated from our girlfriends, we both got what we wanted, and we're still really good friends to this day. In 2020, in between a horrific breakup and getting back with my current partner, I was once again seeking pleasure. I found sex with females for me to be more intimate, more emotional, wild and dirty at times, yes, but also more spiritual. But what I needed that night was for someone to really throw me around. I needed to be absolutely dominated, to be fucked. So I invited a male friend of mine over, we hung out, we watched a basketball game, and as it was getting quite late, I asked him outright, "Okay, are we going to have sex?" I told him to give me a few minutes while I changed my sheets for him, and then it was literally like an exchange of service. He bent me over on the bed, and I soon ended up with my head banging on my bedhead. It was one of those nights, and I had certainly wasted my time in putting clean sheets on. There was no emotion involved, just a mutual, consensual understanding that we were providing satisfaction for each other. We high-fived on the way out, and we're still mates to this day. Chapter 7. My open views on sex and sexuality were often a point of contention, though hardly the only one, between myself and my high school acquaintances, and they contributed to my being the odd one out well into my mid-20s. We'd go out for big group dinners, all of us and our partners, but Jared would always know to save me a seat down the boys' end of the table. I would sit on the border between the sexes with the girls on one side of me and the guys on the other. Since having my children young, I became less and less interested in their conversations. What they spoke about didn't always fulfill me. It didn't enlighten me, nor inspire any new ways of thinking. It was all about who's earning what at their jobs, which random girl we weren't even friends with who had put on weight, and oh my God, did you see who she's dating? That just wasn't me. It wasn't personal. It was just that after entering motherhood, a lot of conversations about other people did not interest me. I've also always maintained incredible friendships with guys, whereas I've always struggled with the female relationships that exist within large female-led groups. I never liked the hierarchy system that operated, where one or two girls led all the decision-making, while the conforming group members below followed suit. I did find that some of the girls I used to know were more inclined to follow crowds and form cliques, and yuck, gross, nope. The second I see clickiness start, I'm out, because if I can't be free to be who I am in an open, accepting environment, I'm much happier on my own, staying in my own lane, choosing my own direction. In that sense, I've always been passionate about never following the crowd, and I hope that by living life as I do so openly on socials and in this book, I can inspire women everywhere to do the same. I touched on it before, but being intimidated by someone's confidence or threatened by their own self-pride does not give you the right to judge their character. It only highlights your own fear of what you'll find if you do a little self-reflection. Until very recently, I was never brave enough to really trust my intuition around this topic, though experience later taught me how crucial she is. Every year, we would all get together for a big girls' lunch, and it really was so much fun. We'd obviously see each other on and off during the year, but it was great to have a big annual catch-up with everyone and reflect on the year that was. I do think long-term female friendships are important, and I maintain now that some of my best girlfriends are the ones I've known for 10 to 15 years. And whilst I find the older you get, the busier you get, and the less time you have for regular catch-ups, the peace found in those long-standing relationships during difficult circumstances is just beautiful. But for the last couple of years, I would get a lot of anxiety in the lead-up to the girls' lunch, simply because I didn't feel like I fitted in with my friends anymore. Not that I ever really did, but as I got older, it was becoming more and more obvious to me just how other I felt around them. My intuition was telling me, these aren't your people, you don't belong. I want to go see them, but I just can't be fucked, I remember telling Jared one year. I didn't feel like I had the right energy to bring to the day, and I wouldn't be able to enjoy myself. Their concerns, while so normal, so typical of single 20-somethings at that stage of life, were no longer ones I shared. I wanted to talk about something that mattered to me, how their mental health was going, whether or not they were happy in life, and what they were looking forward to most, not, say, the size of someone's engagement ring, which is the kind of topic that would often come up. Perhaps it's all the couple in question could afford, I would think. Maybe the bride-to-be didn't even want a big diamond. Or maybe, just maybe, it has nothing to do with us. Where's it written in the book of life that you have to have a big engagement ring? How does that make you a better person? To many of my acquaintances, a ring was a status symbol, but for me, all that mattered was that the person in question was happy. And all I could think about was when the hell lunch would be served so I could get home and sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star to my babies. Don't get me wrong. I have expensive tastes for myself. I know that. And I'm proud of the fact that I would treat myself and others around me, but I certainly don't have any expectations for others. I've never done anything to impress other people. An external opinion has no impact on my actions. Too many people are still caught up in the image and perception they believe they must maintain, that they must need to seek happiness and approval from people who have no role to play in how their own lives play out. My theory has always been, if it has nothing to do with me, then it is nothing to do with me. When Jared and I got engaged, for example, he gave me a black diamond ring. Now, black diamonds are absolutely beautiful. They're very unique and they're not cheap, but they're not typically as expensive as white diamonds. But I didn't need that. I didn't need the size, the carats, the price point as a symbol of Jared's love for and commitment to me. If anything, I wanted Jared to design a unique piece for me in his taste and a style that truly represented us. And that's exactly what he did. It was a thick platinum band with 60 mini diamonds and a 2.5-carat black diamond in the middle. Upon seeing it, I knew I never wanted two rings either. I didn't want the traditional engagement ring and separate wedding ring. My 80-year-old nan was shocked. "But no one will know you're married." If I was going to have a piece of jewellery on my finger for the rest of my life, I wanted it to be exactly what I wanted, and not something that, again, society had told me I'm supposed to have. So I was more than happy with that ring as both my engagement and wedding ring. It was simply perfect as it was. One of my friends later told me that an acquaintance had been talking about it behind my back. A black diamond, what, because they can't afford a real one? And sure, it was rude, but more than anything, I couldn't figure out why anyone would care enough to speak about it. Why did my ring have to be a white diamond? How did it impact their life if we could or couldn't afford a real diamond? Why was something that should be enthusiastically celebrated a competition? It was hurtful. It really did weigh me down for a long time, moments like this, from people who I knew and who knew me. Why did some feel the need to criticize my fiancé's personal choice? He had gone and created something he liked, a piece I would treasure forever and give to my kids someday. I saw a similar theme when it came to choosing my wedding dress. Completely bucking archaic traditions, I didn't wear white. There were many reasons, one of them being that white as a wedding dress colour has historically been linked to the idea of purity, innocence, and virginity. And whilst I wasn't completely against a white dress, that particular notion didn't align with me. But it was actually Jared who finally persuaded me. "It's not that I can't find nice dresses, I can," I told him. "I just don't know if a white wedding dress is for me." He'd always loved me in black, in very classic Audrey Hepburn style, and he knew how much I loved wearing black. So when he said, so simply, "Why don't you wear black?" That was it. That was as much thought as I put into it. I had a gorgeous dress made. I felt like $1 million. Jared was just beaming at the end of the aisle. And yet so many people thought I was doing it to get attention. If they only knew the conversation we'd had, struggle I was having with finding a wedding dress that I loved, and how one little suggestion by my gorgeous man had made so much sense. It wasn't a calculated move to get social media attention or grab headlines. It was just me doing exactly what I wanted to do. A number of people in my old social networks were into party drugs when we were younger too. And again, I'm not expressing this from a place of judgment. I honestly couldn't care less, and even now, I know a lot of people in their late 20s and 30s who experiment with recreational drugs. I tried drugs when I was around 18, ecstasy on two occasions, cocaine once, speed once, but it never really did anything for me, and my anxiety around the thought of my body being out of my control was rife. So I tried and then opted out all within 1 year. Another decision made on my own, one that would only ever impact me, that was again judged by others. Some people seemed to think that I made these decisions because I believed I was better than them. This was far from the truth, as I regularly enjoyed a cigarette, despite knowing how unhealthy that was for me. The humour I found in being jokingly called disgusting for smoking by classy individuals who would snort perfectly straight cocaine lines off filthy surfaces in toilet cubicles. I do think drugs as a whole are gross and the social acceptance around them these days is incredibly unsafe, but it's none of my business what people do to their own bodies. But as usual, I was the black sheep, the odd one out, and I was excluded for my choices. I guess, looking at it now, I could have definitely been giving off the vibe I was being judgmental. I cannot stress enough that it has nothing to do with the drug use itself. It was more around the divide that drugs can cause between people. I didn't enjoy myself going out around those acquaintances who were taking drugs, and it caused me a lot of anxiety when I was in a situation where others were doing it because I knew I wouldn't enjoy myself, and I needed to accept that for what it was. Recognizing that certain people or situations no longer serve you can be very difficult. It can be hard to let go. But life has taught me that holding on longer than you need to becomes taxing on you emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And I was too focused on being the best mother I could be, as well as getting the very best out of myself, to hold on any longer. Chapter 8. I am and always have been a very confident person. If ever I do a public speaking gig or an open Q&A with my followers, I'm often asked how I became so naturally self-assured, but the truth is, I don't really know for sure. I have vivid memories of always being the loud one in the family, the typical little sister gloating and showponying her way through the house so everyone could see her. I was different at school though, never the class clown, reserved, embarrassed to stand in front of a crowd, similar to what I see in my own son now. Presence, as I will call it, is something I have had through my entire life. Perhaps because I was always so much taller than my peers. I was the tallest person in year six out of both the boys and girls, just before the boys' balls dropped and their heights skyrocketed. It's true that I have been this way my entire life, and whilst I have had to fine-tune my own mindset at times, I was born with the idea that no one can nor should tell me who I want to be. Part of this I put down to being the youngest of four girls in a household where I had to learn very early on to back myself. Whilst I think my elder sister's confidence was slightly dismantled after the arrival of twin sisters, leading her to require a deeper sense of acceptance and assurance from people as she's gotten older, I went the other way, knowing I had to do most of it myself because no one else was going to do it for me. Society has regularly shown us, or even taught us, that whilst men are allowed to proudly overestimate their strengths and abilities, women are to do the total opposite. I have often been referred to as arrogant. Oh, you love yourself so much. I've had people say that to me, and it's something we see a hell of a lot within prominent media platforms in today's society. Any sign of a woman displaying self-love, whether for her talents, her looks, or her abilities, is deemed vain and egotistical. To me, arrogance comes into play in social hierarchies. It's an attitude that says, I am better than you, and I don't even need to waste my time explaining why. It's rudeness, an exaggerated sense of self-importance and entitlement, and a looking down on those they deem inferior, never entertaining the idea of a friendship or a conversation with those they feel don't matter. Confidence, on the other hand, I believe stems from true self-worth. Someone willing to both take and show pride in their achievements and failures without having ego interfere. Confident people, while self-assured, are good listeners too, willing to take on feedback for the sake of self-improvement. And lastly, people with confidence are not scared. They're not scared to make mistakes, not scared to take risks, and not scared to shine a light on others doing well either. The lines between confidence and arrogance have far too long been blurred, and it's so refreshing to see the youth of today changing that language and narrative. One of my favourite Instagram pages to follow is that of Chantelle Otten. As both an author and sexologist from Australia, Chantelle has educated me so much on the acceptance of my sexual nature as a woman and to be extremely proud of it. An empowering woman advocating for discussions that were, and in so many areas still are, considered highly taboo, Chantelle leads the way to champion all human self-esteem, individuality, and our right to express ourselves in any way we wish. More and more, we are seeing women take ownership of their lives, their bodies, their worth, without the need for validation or approval. We are becoming more accepting of each other's warts and all, and speaking positively about ourselves is beginning to be praised. I don't apologise for my confidence because it's who I am, and in a world where we're forever being told to love yourself, I have found it difficult at times when I've come under criticism for doing exactly that. A confident Sophie is not me sitting here telling you that I am perfect, that I've never made mistakes in my life or done things that I regret. That would be far from the truth. But a confident Sophie does sit here and admit those things whilst accepting them, taking ownership for my faults, proudly knowing that I have reflected and learnt from them, that you in fact do not need to be good at something in order to be a confident person. A confident person accepts themselves for who they are, regardless of external opinions. My personality, my inherent meanness, does make some people uncomfortable, which is completely unintentional on my part, and I have struggled with that. But I also think, in a way, it's helped me be successful and confident online. People have made assumptions about me my whole life, and I've just had to learn not to care, to become completely immune to the outside noise. When someone has formed a perception of you, even if it's incorrect, their mind is usually made up. You'll rarely have the ability to change that, particularly when you're dealing with, say, online trolls, nor should you ever put that pressure on yourself to do so. A person who has made a judgment on your character without direct communication with you or being in an informed position cannot be valued by you. I always say that in order to value someone's opinion of me, I have to first respect that person. And I will never respect people who believe that critiquing others' life choices from afar is an honourable act. It's also so deeply ingrained in women to back away from praise, to shoot down compliments, that when someone owns and accepts themselves, it can come as a shock to other people. But I refuse to make myself small for society. If someone says, "I love your dress," I don't say, "Oh, it's really old," or, "Oh no, oh my God, I look so fat in this." I say, "Thank you," or, "Isn't the colour beautiful?" And I say it every bloody time because, frankly, if I'm wearing it, I feel good in it, and I'm not going to dismiss someone who goes out of their way to compliment me. Of course, you've got to have a bit of modesty in there too, but I will always thank someone who has gone to the effort of telling me I look great. And that surprises a lot of people because it's so unheard for a woman to own herself in that way. Loving myself just as much in PJs on the couch, no makeup, bags under the eyes, greasy hair thrown into a messy bun has also been crucial to my mindset. We're equally worthy no matter what we're looking like. Yet this has not always been the message society has sent us. Even my 4-year-old daughter is already telling me she's not beautiful unless she's dressed up in a pink, frilly, fairy dress. Somewhere along the way, Florence has been conditioned to believe that she's only pretty when she's wearing a pink dress, that she's only beautiful when she's carrying a handbag, wearing lipstick. Now, I've raised both my kids in the exact same way, never gender specific, and have allowed them to make their own choices and develop their own interests. Somehow, though, Floss is still very stereotypically girly. She loves her dolls, her favourite colour is pink, and she regularly uses phrases such as, "boys can't wear that," referring to dresses and skirts, despite our household never using language like that. Once she was wearing a t-shirt and leggings when I hugged her, gave her a cuddle, and told her she's beautiful. She said, "No, mummy, look at me. I'm not pretty now." Oh my God. What the fuck have I done wrong? But I know this didn't come from me, from any of the parents and role models around her. It's society. This has come from TV or YouTube or maybe at kinder, and it further cements the fact that we all need to stop as a society only telling girls they're beautiful when they're dressed a certain way. Stop telling girls they're pretty when they've got their hair brushed nicely, when they put on their mummy's lipstick, and start telling them they're beautiful all the damn time. That beauty isn't just aligned with physical appearance. We need to highlight the importance of a beautiful personality, a beautiful nature, and a beautiful outlook on life. There is something very fucking wrong with society when a 4-year-old has been conditioned to believe she's only pretty when she's wearing her princess dress. Chapter 9. As confident as I've always been, my self-assuredness did get a little shake-up when I was faced with the realisation that I was attracted to women. Well, a woman. At that stage, when I met her at the panel in 2017, she was still the only female I'd found myself attracted to. I was still as certain of myself in all other facets of my life, but finding myself crushing on a girl did throw me out. I didn't know what was going on, I didn't understand my feelings, but a few months after we'd met, my desire to get to know her better hadn't faded at all. She and I were in touch here and there on social media, but that was as far as it went. Nothing had changed. You probably wouldn't even call us friends. We were in that weird space between when you're more than acquaintances, but you're not quite close enough to call each other mates. We'd chat when I'd go to her footy games with Jared and the kids, as Jared became quite friendly with her too. He is obviously a massive advocate for women's sport, and he used to play football for Carlton, so they'd hang out a bit and she'd bounce ideas off him, that sort of thing. One night in early November, I was flicking through Instagram having a casual stalk when I realised something was missing. Her girlfriend wasn't in any of her recent photos. In fact, scrolling back, she hadn't been in any posts for a while. Had she broken up with her girlfriend? Does this mean she's single? I shouldn't have cared. I shouldn't have. But I did. God, I cared. So, so much. The thought that she might have been out of a relationship excited me. What the fuck? There I was, married, but getting such a kick out of the idea that my pretend girlfriend, as she'd become in my mind, who doesn't know she's my pretend girlfriend, had broken up with her actual girlfriend. I became obsessed with finding out whether they'd split, so I started poking around to find out if she was officially on the market, if this fantasy I'd dreamed up in my head was real. I tiptoed around it, chatting to her on Instagram and asking how things were going, as if I hadn't already guessed. "Oh no, we actually broke up a few months ago," she told me. "Oh, I'm so sorry," I feigned shock and sadness. "If you ever need anyone to talk to or want to bounce things off me," I was getting way too much pleasure out of her being single. It sounds just so fucked to admit that out loud, but it's the truth. And again, it wasn't something I was hiding from my husband. I told Jared as soon as I found out they'd broken up. "Well, you're in now. Go on then," he joked. Was I in? No, there's no way. So when she messaged me out of the blue asking if she could come to my office one morning, I was shocked. "Hey, are you at work today? I've got something for you." "Oh my God. Yeah, sure, the address is..." What could she possibly have for me? She arrived at my office in Port Melbourne. We hugged and chatted for a while, friendly as usual. Then she reached into her bag and pulled out a tiny footy jumper for my baby, Florence. Up until that point, I'd been convinced I was caught up in my own little fantasy. Nothing more than a dumb little crush. It didn't occur to me for a second that this incredible, strong, sexy woman could possibly be sharing the same feelings for me. Is she just doing this to be nice? To be a good friend? Does she buy all of her friends' jumpers for their kids? But we don't even really know each other. Why is she doing this? Is this normal? She'd driven into my office specially. She'd bought my daughter a gift. Even though I was starting to wonder if there was something more on her side, I still assumed she only wanted to be friends with me. But looking back now, I can see that there must have been something about me that intrigued her too. Because really, who was I to her? I was nobody, just some chick she'd met at a speaking event. We'd been friends on Instagram, we'd run into each other a bit here and there, say hi at footy games or two, but there was no long-standing friendship there. She certainly didn't have to buy footy jumpers for my kids. But whether either of us liked to admit it, there was a connection there. Whether that was a friendship or more, well, that was yet to unfold. I thanked her for the gift, we grabbed some lunch and sat talking for almost 2 hours about footy, about her breakup, about what was coming up for her career. We had a really good chat, and for the first time since I'd met her, I felt like I could relax. I wasn't nervous anymore. I did feel like a genuine, beautiful friendship could form now. She was no longer some hot girl I messaged on Instagram. She was a really interesting person and I wanted to get to know her better. My intense, in hindsight, slightly creepy, obsession began to cool off, transforming into a genuine friendship with this woman who, months earlier, had set my soul on fire with one glance. The better I got to know her, the closer friends we became. We were texting, calling, hanging out, and I wasn't some giddy schoolgirl with a crush anymore. When we'd met, I think my obsession was fueled by the fact that I didn't know her. She had been so mysterious, this woman who was somehow also masculine, who made my stomach do backflips with her piercing eyes. Now, a full year on from that crazy first meeting, I still thought she was attractive and there was something simmering away underneath the surface. But Jared and I were in a really good place at this point, And I had gotten pretty good at ignoring that niggling feeling that I wanted something more than a friendship with this woman. At this stage, Jared and I had already begun to discuss options regarding our relationship moving forward, totally separate from this woman, weighing up if either of us wanted to be actually married anymore. Neither of us had ever really wanted to follow traditional norms, and we'd openly discussed our annoyance with ourselves for rushing so quickly to do something we thought we had to do. But my logical brain rushed into play, insisting I needed to make giving our relationship another crack my utmost priority. That was until the three of us went out for lunch one day. Jared and I were heading to a cafe, and I flicked her a text asking her to come join. We were all mates, why not ask her to come along? The conversation turned to sex, as it often does with adult friends, and when Jared got up to go to the bathroom, I found myself asking her about how women have sex with other women. How do girls have sex? I asked point blank. What do you mean? She laughed. Like, is it hands? Is it tongues? What counts as sex? I was so naive. She grabbed my hand from across the table, looked into my eyes, and tapped on my long pink acrylic nails. Well, for starters, you're going to have to get rid of those. I fucking died. The way she touched me, the way those eyes shot straight to my soul. If I were a guy, if I could have had an erection in that moment, the whole table would have moved. Just like that, I was in love with her again. Is she being cheeky? Can she tell that I'm into her? Oh my God, I've got to get rid of my nails. That's it. I'm cutting off my nails. There's this joke within the gay community. It's very stereotypical, but it's just a joke, really, that you can tell if a girl's gay if she's got short nails. And looking back now, it's funny because that was one of the first things I noticed about her. I couldn't fathom why her nails were cut so brutally short. I also realized later that I started doing little things like that, like cutting my nails. I still wasn't consciously contemplating sleeping with a girl, but did some part of me want to maybe start putting out the vibe that I wanted to? Yes, absolutely. I wanted to cut my nails short so this woman might think that I'm a lesbian. It was so out of character for me to do anything to create an impression, but something was happening to me. Meanwhile, Jared had given me the green light to explore this fantasy. Go for it, he said. Jared's like me. He can separate sex from emotion, and we both got really turned on watching each other kiss other people. I loved seeing him pursue another girl at a nightclub and kiss her, and it was the same for him. It was just our thing. We liked it. Every human and every relationship, regardless of the dynamic, is entitled to have their own way of doing things, especially when it comes to their own fantasies. We were just so turned on by each other, even if that meant with other people. So that's why, when this arose, he so enthusiastically urged me to explore it. That was just us. I know a lot of people would think, I can't believe that he let her do that, or I can't believe she did that while she was married. But that was just the way we worked. Again, society tells us we're not supposed to be okay with talking about things like that, you know? You're not supposed to tell people that stuff. So, just like that, my crush turned friend was now my reignited obsession and my hall pass. I'm not just going to go up to her and say, hey, do you want to have sex with me? I'm married and I've never done it with a girl before, but like, do you want to do it? I laughed to Jared as we spoke about it for the millionth time. And what if I don't like a vagina? And like, how do you do it? What do I do to it? Well, you've got one, he trailed off. Yeah, but I don't do all those things myself. Truth be told, I didn't even know if I wanted to have sex with her. I did want to kiss her though, that much I knew. I'd never wanted to kiss a girl in my life, but I was so fucking sexually attracted to this woman. I was obsessed with the idea of exploring that with her. Jared and I would talk about it, plan out the scenario together, and discuss how I was going to do it. My husband, who I was still very much in love with, was like my bro, my wingman, talking me through it. I began to step things up. I flirted more. I dropped hints. I wanted her to know what my intentions were, but I didn't want her to think I was doing anything wrong by Jared. And that is a tricky thing to convey to someone when you operate in such an open dynamic. It can be confronting to those who don't have the same moral views, and I completely respect that. She could well have assumed I was trying to have an affair behind my husband's back. And it's not like you can just DM someone on Instagram saying, "Hey, I want to explore this with you. Don't worry, my husband says it's fine." What if she thought I was some kind of freak? Or I totally misread the whole situation and she actually only thought of me as a friend? But I also knew what I wanted. And when I know what I want, I get it. And I knew she was interested in me too, in some way or another, even if she wasn't on the same level as me. I had to put it out there. So I did one day during one of our Instagram chats. "So how's single life?" I asked. "Yeah, good, you know, time to do this. You know, I think I'd be jealous if you had a new girlfriend." It was on the table, finally, but she didn't pick up the hint. Or if she did, she didn't do anything with it. Actually, she kind of ignored me until I prodded again, at which point she put me straight into the friend zone. I'd allowed myself to be extremely vulnerable at this point, risking this friendship we'd built, but I was also aware of exactly how forthright it might have sounded. "I think we're just friends, Soph." Damn. But I had this feeling she only said that because I was married, and as far as she was concerned, that made me off limits. I needed her to know that it was fine with Jared. "Of course," I replied, "but I think you're smart enough to know what I'm thinking." "Yeah," she replied, "I've always known what you're thinking." So she admitted it. She knew, she'd always known, that I'd been into her. A couple of weeks later, I was out for dinner and drinks with some friends. One girlfriend and I had a couple more cocktails than everyone else, and when they were getting ready to go home, we decided we wanted to go out. I hadn't gone out in forever, and it was completely random that I was struck by the sudden urge to go dancing. But my friend Amelia was single and always up for a good time, so off we went. We headed to some bar in Toorak with another mate, but it was terrible. So we admitted defeat, jumped in the car and headed home not long after. As we wove our way through Melbourne's busy lit up streets, I jumped on Instagram for a scroll. Wait, she's out tonight too? There it was, on her stories. My crush was in the city. It was unheard of. She rarely drank, hardly ever went out. She was every bit the professional athlete. And even though it was off season, I was shocked to see her in a bar with some mates on a night out. Things had gotten a bit weird after our last conversation, and we hadn't spoken in a while. I felt like I'd completely embarrassed myself and lost my chance at even a friendship with her, so I had stepped back and given both of us the space that we needed. But the night was young, and the cocktails I'd thrown back at dinner had made me bold. "Oi, where are you?" Is she even going to reply? "In Richmond, where are you?" Oh my God, she wrote back. Straight away. Shit, where are we? I opened Google Maps, searched for the club she'd mentioned. We were right around the corner, 2 minutes away, actually. "Stop the car," I shrieked. I turned to my friend beside me in the back seat. She knew about my little crush. "You've got to take one for the team and come out with me." Indecision played on her face. "Come on, we wanted to go out. Where we went was just shit, but this is going to be fun, I promise. She's with a whole group of girls." "But I don't know anyone," she countered. "Neither do I." I knew her, though. And I was looking great. I'd had a few cocktails, and we'd spoken numerous times in the past about how fun a night out together would be. Of course, I'd envisaged kissing her, and I knew that it would only happen if we were having a drunk night out together. I wouldn't have been brave enough to make a move without a few drinks in my system, and I was aware she wasn't the type to do so either. I looked at my friend, begging silently. "All right, I'll come." It felt like it was meant to be. Everything had worked in my favour that night. We happened to be out. We wanted to go out dancing. She was out that night. My friend agreed to come with me. If she'd said no, there's no way I'd have gone alone. This couldn't be a coincidence, some chance encounter. This was alignment. Yet, as excited as I was, with butterflies in my stomach, I was also still trying to understand why I felt this way about a girl. I'm straight. I am married. I shouldn't be attracted to her. But I am. I walked up the stairs to the Richmond Club, nerves gripping my stomach a little tighter with every step I took. It was thrilling and scary and incredible. I was bouncing with excitement as I strode through the door, heading straight for the bar to grab a drink. I didn't want to look like I was looking for her, like I was trying to find someone in the crowd. I wanted to look self-assured, certain. Ding! My phone buzzed in my hand. Where are you? It was her. We're at the bar. 2 seconds later, there she was, hitting me like a ton of bricks all over again. Hair up in a bun, no makeup, plain black t-shirt and jeans combo, cool ASICS runners. Why am I attracted to that? She didn't look the way I would have expected someone I'd find attractive to look. But then there was her. 10 out of 10. Fucking perfection. She grabbed my hand and my heart leapt into my throat as I tried not to overthink the move. After all, you grab your friends' hands in nightclubs too, right? It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I liked it. I liked that I was walking through a nightclub with this girl holding my hand. It felt right. She led me over to her group of friends, introduced me to everyone, shouting over the pumping bass coming from the nearby speaker. They were all dressed the same as her, tees, sneakers, jeans. Fuck, they look so comfortable. I knew I looked good when I left the house earlier that night, but I suddenly wished I was wearing something other than my leather pants, my giant hoop earrings, my silver 12-centimeter heeled boots. What the fuck are you wearing those shoes for? One of the girls shouted, laughing over the music. Not a bad question. Seeing these girls out in t-shirts and jeans, I fucking wanted to wear that out. Sure, I guess I could have, but I didn't grow up with the belief that it was okay to wear that for a night out. I grew up in a world where you wore high heels when you went out, you wore false lashes and you had your lipstick on and you had your hair done because that's what girls wear. And then here's this group of chicks, beers in hands, having the best time on the dance floor, not giving a fuck what anyone else thought. There was no going to the bathroom in a horde, no bitching about what someone else was wearing, no fighting or drama. The simplicity promised in a night out with this group of women was instantly appealing. It was just a group of girls having fun. I didn't realize it at the time, but in that moment, I began to find my place. We were openly flirty all night. None of her friends knew who I was, but it was pretty damn obvious that there was some chemistry between us. She introduced me as her friend, but it didn't take long before her friends started asking me what was going on with us. Oh, no, nothing, I laughed. They could tell I was lying. One minute, their mate had disappeared into the crowd, and next, she'd come back holding hands with this tall, brunette, girly girl. Amongst a bunch of fellow gay women, it was probably a fair assumption to make. Bullshit, look at you two, you're all over each other. And we were. I could tell she was having fun. She was certainly pushing the boundaries, and I think she was enjoying the attention of it all. I knew what her intentions were when we went up to the bar. Upon me asking her what she wanted to drink, she told me she was driving, but in seeing the slight disappointment on my face, she asked if I wanted her to have a few drinks with me. I gave her a little smile and she ordered herself a wet pussy shot followed immediately by a vodka and soda, her hand around my back the whole time. We were acting like a couple. Everywhere we went, we were holding hands. We were close on the dance floor. All of her friends were convinced we'd been sleeping together and it was very clear to me that, oh my fucking God, I'm going to kiss her tonight. What do I do? I asked my friend as we stumbled foggily into the bathroom, taking a dance break from the wildness outside. How do I kiss her? Do I do it? Is she going to do it? Do I do it in front of other people? I'd never kissed a girl before, let alone in the middle of a nightclub. And I'm married, and people know who I am. I'm stopped and asked for photos when I'm out. And what, I'm going to kiss a girl right here where anyone could see? I didn't know how to act. I didn't know how far I could push it. Whilst this innocent flirting was most likely very common for her on a night out, the thought of just grabbing a girl's hips or dancing closely with her was completely foreign to me. Plus, she was shorter than me, something else totally new. With my husband or any guy I'd been with, I was always the small one. So when I was with her, taller and bigger, I didn't know what I was meant to do. Was I meant to grab her? Who plays which role here? Obviously, that's a whole different conversation around gender stereotypes, but this is what was going through my head as a conventionally straight woman in society. As the night went on, the drinks flowed and her friends got bolder and bolder. "You're so going to fuck," one of them leaned in and shouted in my ear. I balked again. "No, I was married." "But I'll kiss her in the bathroom if she wants," I thought. I couldn't get the idea out of my mind. Even if it didn't happen, even if that night amounted to nothing, I was still having the time of my life. I was in an environment where I felt safe. I wasn't being judged. No one was looking at me. No one cared who I was. It was liberating. We headed outside on our way to another club, and as I stood waiting by the door, I heard someone shouting, "Sharon! Sharon! I've got a taxi! Come on!" I looked around, wondering who the fuck Sharon was and how she'd managed to miss this girl shrieking her name. "Sharon!" The doors opened and my crush walked out, grabbing my hand in one of hers, wrapping her other arm around my waist and holding me close as we walked down the stairs to the row of waiting cabs. "It's Sophie, you idiot," my crush said pointedly to the woman who'd been shouting for Shazza. The woman I met that night screaming the wrong name at me, whose name I later learnt was Harriet, is now one of my best friends in the world. She still has me saved in her phone as Sharon. Gosh, it provides us with so many laughs. The way that my crush responded to Harriet, it was almost like she took a bit of ownership of me in that moment. It was exciting. Her hand on my lower back was electric, just like when I shook her hand for the first time over a year ago when we met on the panel. A jolt of pure energy. The night wore on, and still, I wanted to make a move, but I had no idea how. Do I just kiss her? Do gay people just openly kiss other gay people? Surely she'll kiss me. She's the gay one, right? Does she even want to kiss me, or is she just liking this attention? She was playing with me, whispering in my ear, pushing her body up against mine as we were dancing, putting her head on my shoulder, doing everything she knew would make me quiver. And I couldn't get enough. Our group of eight was down to four when Amelia, who'd been my wingwoman all night, decided she needed to head home, which meant I had to go too. We live around the corner from each other and I'd arrived with her, so if she was going to go, I was clearly going to go with her, as it was the safest option for both of us. It was nearing 5 a.m, and whilst Amelia insisted it was time for her to go, she urged me to stay, to keep enjoying myself and to see where the night took me. By 5 a.m, the club was closing. There were three of us left, me, my crush, and one of her friends. And we made our way out of the club, daylight threatening to break through the dimness of dawn any second. We were drunk, all of us, but her other mate was pollaxed. "So are you two going home together or what?" she slurred. We looked at each other, not sure what to say, the tension between us set to explode at any minute. "Can you please just kiss so we can all go home? You obviously like each other. Just hurry up." Awkward, although she wasn't wrong. "No, we're not going to kiss," my crush replied. "I can't. She's married." There it was. The reason she hadn't made a move in the club was exactly what I had suspected. It wasn't that she didn't want to, but she had no interest in being the other woman. I turned to her, holding my breath, ready to confess. "It's fine. Jared knows everything. Trust me." Her friend took the hint, jumping into a cab as we stood there on the pavement staring at each other, sinking into that exquisite will we or won't we feeling, neither of us prepared to make the first move. "I need to be completely honest with you," I started. "You obviously know how I felt about you. It's been a very badly kept secret for a long time. Yes, I'm married. But Jared is across everything and he supports it and I just don't want to get involved in something. I don't want to disrespect anyone," she interrupted. She was so torn. I could see it all over her face. She obviously wanted me, but she also really liked Jared as a friend and didn't want to do anything to disrupt their friendship either. And for all she knew, I could have been bullshitting, telling her it was fine with him when he actually had no idea. I understood exactly how confronting this situation may have been for her, so I stepped back, both physically from her and mentally from the idea of kissing her. "That's totally fine. I respect that. Thank you for being honest," I said. "I'm going to give you a kiss on the cheek now," she said to me, "and I'm going to jump in that taxi behind me. We're going to leave it for tonight and we'll reassess later." After all that, it's not going to happen. She leaned in close and slowly, softly, pressed her lips to my cheek at the very corner of my mouth. If I'd moved barely an inch, her mouth would have been on mine, warm, soft, sensuous. She was trying to do the right thing. She didn't want to get involved with a married woman, but she was dying to kiss me as well. She pulled back, only a little, and I could feel her breath on my cheek. "Don't you dare kiss me there," I whispered in her ear. "Not if you're not going to kiss me properly." And then she did. She grabbed me and kissed me, and it was the most intense kiss I'd ever experienced. It should have been strange. I was kissing a girl for the first time, but it wasn't. It was everything that I had built up to be. It was intense. It was seductive. It was passionate. It was 5 a.m, and I was making out with a girl pressed up against a bin in the middle of the busy street, people spilling out of clubs everywhere after their nights out. Very quickly, I forgot all about the fact that I was married, that I was a mother, that I was Sophie Keisha. In that moment, that's exactly what I wanted to be doing, and I did not care what anyone thought. Chapter 10. Things went from 0 to 100 after my first kiss with her. Suddenly, it was like I had a girlfriend and a husband. I'd wake up to messages wishing me good morning, texts saying things like, "Hey, beautiful, when am I going to see you again? Did you have a good day? When do you want to catch up? I want to have sex with you." Our texts to each other as we made our way home after our first kiss were pretty steamy. She'd pulled herself away from me that night and jumped in a cab without saying a word, but the floodgates had opened, literally, and it all went next level. "I want your hands on me," I'd written to her, one of many overtly sexual texts that flew back and forth between us as we drove away from each other. "I'm coming to your house right now." "No," she said. "If we're going to do this, I don't want you to be drunk." I appreciated her thoughtfulness and her ability to have respect for me in such a tense moment. But fuck, where did she get that restraint? We kept texting, calling, flirting, spending more and more time together, and Jared was still across it all. He knew when we were talking. He knew when we were meeting up for a coffee. He knew everything, and as far as he was telling me, he was fine with it. Was he actually fine with it, though? I often found myself wondering. He would tell me that he felt no jealousy, no competitiveness, and no ego because she was a woman. He wasn't threatened in the same way he would be if it was a male that I was having this amount of communication and connection with. Looking back, I do believe that he was as naive as me in these moments. Though both well aware that we had been facing some separate relationship issues over the past year, neither of us would have imagined that this could possibly turn into something more meaningful. To me, it was having fun and it was harmless. I hadn't been in this position with a female before, so I was unaware of the change in me that this would bring. "I'm still straight. I just want to experience life a little bit. I'm straight. I just want to have sex with a girl. But I am definitely straight." I was also loving getting to know her friends. I had been welcomed with open arms by this group of people, and a whole new and different world was opening up to me. A world of acceptance where there was no judgment and no pressure to fit a mold forced onto us by bullshit, archaic societal norms that had been in place for hundreds of years. I'd seen a glimpse of this new world that night at the club with her friends, And the more I ventured into those relationships, the more I was finding my place in the world. I didn't realize that that's what was happening at the time, but this was the start of me discovering where I truly belonged. One of her good friends was gay, very masculine, and even had a bit of facial hair on her, something I found so intriguing. This was someone I perceived to be a woman, but she had a beard. It never came from a judgmental place. I was just fascinated by people who were so confident, who dressed and presented exactly as they wanted to in life. This person who rocked her facial hair was inspiring to me because she was living life exactly